The VGRT Gaming Podcast, episode 319, recorded on July 28th, 2013. And welcome to the 319th edition of the TD Gaming Podcast, and 152nd edition of Video Game Roundtable. I am Jonah Falcon.
And I am Jordan Lund.
The VGRT Gaming Podcast focuses on game news from the around the industry. You'll notice there's no gaming flashback or gaming history. That's because there's just so much news that was this past week. They're overflowing with news. It's just a lot of news.
That's okay. I've got enough in my head to make up for it.
Okay. I didn't get to understand that.
I said, that's okay. I've got enough in my head to make up for it.
Yeah, I know. I don't understand the joke.
Oh, as far as gaming history and gaming flashback.
Oh, okay.
I picked up one game on a bargain basement price. It was White Knight Chronicles for the PS3. I was going to pick up White Knight Chronicles 1, which was on sale for $10, and I saw White Knight Chronicles 2 next to it for $17, and then I thought, oh, well, you know, both for less than $30? Sure, why not? Then I noticed that White Knight Chronicles 2 includes 1. So, two games for $17, done. Been working through that. That's been a lot of fun. And I got iRobot up and running on emulation. iRobot, I think we did on Flashback.
A couple of weeks ago.
Yeah, been percolating in my brain since we did it on Flashback, and it's like, you know what? I wonder if it's emulated. Sure enough, it is, and I got it up and running in MAME, and it's a blast from 1983.
Well, I did start playing Shadowrun Ferns, which was a Kickstarter title that was released this past week. I played about 45 minutes of it, and it's pretty good. I mean, it's a 1999 game, so. You know, it's not like a AAA title RPG, but there's enough there, and also it comes with an editor, and there's already someone who is attempting to recreate the entire SNES SNES game of Shadowrun, recreated it for the game. So there's going to be tons of content when that comes out.
That's cool.
You know, well, when people start using user-created content.
Right, right.
I've also been playing a lot of the Brave New World expansion to Civilization V, and I'm going to be posting a review of that on Game Stooge.
Nifty.
Yeah. So, there's a crap ton of news this week. We don't have enough time for gaming flashback or gaming history, but the news is extremely interesting. Go ahead, Jordan. Take it away.
Microsoft officially announces indie self-publishing to be unveiled at Gamescom 2013, and this comes to us direct from Major Nelson himself. Major Nelson has officially confirmed the rumor that Microsoft would be instituting indie self-publishing for the Xbox One, and that the publisher would be detailing it at Gamescom 2013 in Germany. According to Xbox Live VP Mark Witten, quote, "Our vision is that every person can be a creator, that every Xbox One can be used for development, that every game and experience can take advantage of all the features of Xbox One and Xbox Live. This means self-publishing. This means Kinect, the cloud, achievements. This means great discoverability on Xbox Live. We'll have more details on the program and the timeline at Gamescom in August." Microsoft announced 3 weeks ago that it would be holding its first ever conference at Gamescom 2013, which will be held from the 22nd through the 25th of August.
Now, again, this comes as a surprise, but even more of a surprise is the fact that Microsoft, you won't have to buy a separate dev kit, basically. Microsoft will simply flip a switch from your remotely on your store-bought Xbox One and turn it into a dev kit that way, which is, yeah. And you know how much dev kits cost? I mean, what is it, like $20,000 or something like
that? Yeah, yeah. No, that's a huge deal for indie developers. And being able to self-publish was what kept things from, like, Oddworld from appearing on the Xbox One. So I think it's about time that Microsoft saw the wisdom of this move. And, reverse their decisions as they've reversed many other decisions recently. It was about time.
You know, the thing is, I see this sort of like a checklist in front of Microsoft on things we can take away from Sony. You know, first, okay.
Well, I don't see it as taking away from Sony. I see it as doing what Sony already announced 6 months ago and then doing it themselves.
Well, I don't know if Sony announced it sort of as they always had it, but here's the thing. It's sort of like a checklist of, okay, well, people are complaining, online online. Okay. Well, sorry, Sony. You won't have that to weigh against us. Okay. Da-da-da-da. Oh, wait. People are complaining that we thing is that Microsoft has always been very, very friendly to the indie community, despite what they may say, because, you know, they have that. For one thing, they have the Imagine contest, and it's been going on for 13 years. They sponsor, you know, they cross that check off. Then they said, okay, indie games, okay, we're going to cross that check off. What's the last thing on the list? Well, we all know what the last thing on the list is. That's price.
Price is a big factor, yes.
So I'm wondering if that's going to be their big announcement at Gamescom. I wonder if they're also going to introduce something like a – there was a big rumor – which I think will never happen. That is, that at some point Microsoft's going to announce a Kinect-less Xbox One, but that's sort of defeating the point, because one of the biggest point about it is that if you're a developer, you know it's going to be there. Everybody's going to have that. So if you don't know if someone's going to have Kinect or not, why would you want to, you know, create Kinect functionality in your game if you don't think everybody on your system is going to have it? What I do
right. That's the whole point of including it, correct?
But what I do think is that they will have a what they will have is the subsidized
The subsidy, right? You subscribe to Xbox Live Gold for a locked-in contract period and get the console at a discounted rate.
Right. Now, here's the thing: is that you can't really do it to like $200 for 2 years, because Microsoft still has to get its money back on production. So if they do something like a subsidy, I'm willing to bet it'll be more like $300 and $15 a month for a year, just 1 year, which would be enough, I believe, to pay back. That would be 500. Let's see, 15 times 12, that would be $600, no? No.
And it can't just be the discounted price of the console as well, because you still have, you not only have to recoup the cost of the console,
you have to
pay for Live as well. So, yeah.
So, I think you'll see something that's sort of, you know, that's not like the family deal that's $100 plus 2 years of Live, you know, which I believe is 2 years of Live at $10 a month. You'll see something a little bit. But on the other hand, if someone's walking in the store and they say $300 and an asterisk if you pay $15 for 12 months of Live, you know, I mean, it's funny. People don't look at the fine print. They'll just say, "Oh, look, a Galaxy S4 for only $100."
My wife makes a very good living off people not reading the fine print. Yes.
Yeah. By the way, I'm waiting for my own new cell phone to come. It has my home phone, so I no longer have a landline. And I learned this when I picked up my landline. Vonage told me, "You know, you don't have service on this anymore." but I'm getting a Galaxy S2.
Nice.
So, I'm kicking myself for not getting the S4 because it's not that big a difference in price.
Yeah. I am about a week away from a Microsoft Surface.
Anyway, not everybody reacted to this news. I mean, by the way, indie developers reacted, had a broad range of reactions to this before it was actually official, right? You know, when it was just a rumor, a very strong rumor, a report by Game Informer. And some were extremely pleased. Like the people at Warframe said, of course you're going to develop for the Xbox One. It was the only thing that was preventing us from you know, announcing an Xbox One version was this you must have a publisher thing. Now, we're going to move on to Phil Fish. Now, if you remember, Phil Fish is a developer of Fez, and he's made a lot of controversial statements. Well, this time I think he's gone off a little bit on the deep end.
So the next
news item: Phil Fish explodes on Twitter, cancels Fez 2 in a huff. And this comes to us from Strategy Informer. Indie developer Phil Fish went on a Twitter rampage and canceled Fez 2, angrily stated he's done with video game development. It started when game trailer's annoyed gamer took Phil Fish and Jonathan Blow to task on an episode of Everything in the Kitchen Sink for not reacting to Microsoft reversing itself on independent developers now being able to self-publish, you know. So basically, he just wanted, you made this big deal about not being able, you know, Microsoft not allowing you to self-publish, which is why Fez 2 is not an Xbox One, and, oh, I forgot the name of Jonathan Blow's thing that he was advertising. I mean, you saw the game. It wasn't that inventive a puzzle game. At least it didn't look good. Anyway, Phil Fish posted on Twitter, @annoyedgamer, compare your life to mine, then kill yourself.
I will add that during Phil Fish's rampage, and we have the screenshots up here on gamingpodcast.net, he's using a picture of Andy Kaufman as his avatar. So I don't know how serious we're supposed to take this.
Well,
but you know, Andy Kaufman was very much, you know, irascibility to the point of performance art. So if he's using that as his avatar, I'm not sure what he means by this.
Andy
Kaufman
was the boy who cried wolf times 10, which is why when he was dying of cancer, no one believed him. Because he played practical jokes all the time. You know, they say, oh, look, the doctor's not wearing shoes. He's wearing sneakers. He must be a fake doctor, you know?
Yeah.
And people to this day think maybe he faked his death as sort of the old meta game because he loved meta.
Yes.
Once in Las Vegas, his character, Tony Clifton, right, became so popular that Las Vegas said, you know what, why don't you do your Tony Clifton lounge act for our show? So what happens is that's exactly what he did. So he had Tony Clifton performing as a lounge act. However, he had his friend Bob Zmuda doing it. And people in the audience thought that it was Andy Kaufman doing it. So near the end of the act, Andy Kaufman would come up, not in costume, during the act, and just come up, wave, and goodbye. And people realized, wait a minute, we weren't watching Andy Kaufman at all. So that caused a lot of complaints. But then again, how could they complain? They went to see a Tony Clifton show, and they just saw Tony Clifton.
Right. Exactly. Yeah.
They didn't say that it had to be played by. They didn't say that it was going to be played by Andy Kaufman. In this case, it was played by Bob Zmuda. Anyways,
and Bob Zmuda was actually hilarious as Tony Clifton as well.
Yeah. He then declared, "I'm done. Fez 2 is canceled. Goodbye." Fisher's studio Polytron then tweeted, "It's with a heavy heart that we announce that Fez 2 has been canceled and is no longer in development. We apologize for the disappointment." Later, Phil Fish explained, "To be clear, I'm not canceling Fez 2 because some boorish said something stupid. I'm getting it to get out of games, and I'm getting out of games because I choose not to put up with this abuse anymore. And we should stay tuned as this drama continues." Now, if he's trying to pull a Andy Kaufman, then there will be a Fez 2. On the other hand, he hasn't been exactly the most stable person in the past anyway.
And you know, even if he wants to get out of gaming, and there's nothing wrong with changing fields, right? I mean, everybody's allowed to decide what they want to do
for a
living.
Here it sounds like he's taking his ball and going home.
At least sell off the rights to somebody and say, look, okay, fine. I need a nest egg to go get started somewhere else. Here, you go make this game. I'm done with it.
Yeah, but how many people are in Polytron? I mean, how many? Phil Fish and someone else? Because Polytron is acting like the good cop to his bad cop or whatever the equivalent might be.
Right.
It's just bizarre. And, you know, and speaking of your friend who did Oddworld, he really went off the deep end as well. Yes, we have his story later on in the story. We can discuss him.
Okay.
But we'll see about Fez. Now, here's a question. Did you ever play Fez?
I did play Fez. I got the demo of Fez and played around with it a little bit. I it's not my kind of game. I'm just so burned out on platformers
that it
didn't do anything for me.
But you can
it was an interesting conceit.
Yeah. Well, you ever play Crush?
No.
Oh, that's on the PSP. That was the same thing in which it's a 2D 3D platformer in which, you know, you change the perspective, and it changes the board at the same time. The difference between that and Fez is that Fez turned it into sort of like a Super NES game.
Right.
Using voxels, you know, so it looks could have been possible in the SNES, but there's no way in hell it could have performed what Fez was able to do. So, we'll see. But this next item is more personal towards you, Jordan.
Shadow of the Eternals back on Kickstarter, no longer episodic. This comes to us from videogamer.com. Dennis Dyack's Precursor Games has put Shadow of the Eternals back on Kickstarter, this time asking for $750,000, down from the previous Kickstarter crowdfunding attempt of $1.35 million. The developer raised funds through other means, lowering the goal this time around. The other major change is that the game will no longer be episodic. Rather, the game will be a single 8 to 10 hour game released on PC and Wii U. A PlayStation 4 version is listed as a stretch goal as well. Shadow of the Eternals is a spiritual successor to the GameCube classic Eternal Darkness and will feature the same protagonist, Paul Becker, who will be voiced by David Hayter, who also was the voiced the original Becker. Hayter is best known as the voice of Solid Snake for most of the Metal Gear Solid series. As with Eternal Darkness, Shadow of the Eternals will find the player leaping between wildly different time periods, while the game will screw with the gamer's head as well, once again doing things like pretending the volume was turned off, distorting the screen, threatening to wipe out game saves, and so on.
Now, the thing is, I might add that the backing is a lot more furious right now. With 29 days left to go, it's raised $160,000. So it looks like this time it's going to pass.
Well, that's good. And you know, one of the things we mentioned on one of the previous shows was that the people who didn't back his previous Kickstarter were giving him advice, saying, "Look, I would have given you money if you had done this." And apparently, he actually listened to that advice, which is fantastic.
How do you know? How much do you think it was the fact that it's no longer episodic, that it's not going to be an entire game?
You know, I don't know. I was down for it either way. You know, I think the idea of being able to back something that's solid and a known quantity, and not, okay, we're going to get two episodes and then it dies, is a better idea than doing it episodically. So yeah.
So I backed it. Are you going to back it, or are you going to wait until it's?
I actually haven't looked at the Kickstarter yet, and I'm actually going to look at it live on the air as we speak. 3,891 backers and 160,000 pledged of 750,000. I want to see what the
the stretch goals are.
The stretch goal now, is for the
it's for announced the PS4. For the PS4. You want to bet that that's actually PS4 or Xbox One, because now that the you can self-publish is now that block is removed. Now they will say, "Oh, you know what? We might as well."
Exactly. Yeah. Yeah.
So
rewards. Royalty style portrait.
Anyway,
yeah.
Now I know you're a big fan of this guy. I'm pretty sure you are, from what you said. I think so. Neil Gaiman has announced his first video game, Wayward Manor, and this comes to us from Strategy Informer.
Oh, this sounds so incredibly freakishly cool. I'm sorry, I don't want to interrupt, but I am so excited about this game.
Well,
this,
you know, how could I have something you reacting to it if you pre-react to what I'm about to say?
Yes.
So let me convince
you. I read ahead. I know what you're going to say. I cheated and read ahead. Okay. So,
legendary writer Neil Gaiman, who is best known for American Gods and the Sandman comics, has announced his first video game, Wayward Manor, an adventure puzzle game set from the Roaring Twenties into the future, inspired by such films as Arsenic and Old Lace and The Man Who Came to Dinner. According to Gaiman in his introductory video, it's lighthearted, it's goofy, it's nice to flip points of view. Normally in a game, if you're in a haunted house, you're going to be walking through it intrepidly with your flashlight, your bill, book, and candle, and your copy of the Necronomicon. This sounds like an even better version of Luigi's Haunted House games, doesn't it? And you keep going until you find the ghost. In this one, I want you to be, all you want to do is be left in peace with your lovely house and be left alone. I don't want to give anything away, but it's safe to say you were killed in the 1880s and you were killed for a reason. In Wayward Manor, the player plays a ghost who wants to get rid of his house of all the living intruders. A dysfunctional family of misfits and eccentrics, the player must uncover their deepest anxieties to absorb their player's fears to drive them crazy. Before you go on, this sort of sounds, and now I saw some of the graphics for this game. You'll notice it has a certain resemblance to another game I know you liked, and that is Stacked by Tim Schafer. And the idea of going into their heads to uncover their deepest anxieties, that sounds a little like Psychonauts. So
it does. It also sounds the inverse of what the game we were just talking about, Shadow of the Eternals, where the game is screwing with you as the player. In the Neil Gaiman title, you as the player are screwing with the characters in the game. And it reminds me similarly of a game from the old PlayStation era called Tecmo's Deception, where the idea was that, you know, instead of being the adventurers invading the dungeon to, you know, plunder and rescue the princess, you're the evil minion, the evil overlord in control of the dungeon, trapping all the adventurers and then,
keeper?
You know, harvesting their souls and stuff like that.
Isn't that Dungeon Keeper as well? I mean, it sounds
kind of like Dungeon Keeper as well.
It sounds a lot like it's going to have the same sort of puzzle mechanic that's in Stacked. Now, you've played Stacked, in which Stacked is that game which you play a Matryoshka doll and you hop inside people to gain their abilities, you know?
Yeah, Stacked is a brilliant game. And every little it's the Russian nested dolls, right? And
yeah, Matryoshka
dolls. you can only jump into the doll that's the next size up from you or the next size down from you. Yeah. So you can't jump from the smallest to the largest. You have to do an incremental increase. Yeah, very good game. And Neil Gaiman has a fantastic track record for writing in general. I mean, people know him from the Sandman comic, but also his novels and stuff like that.
I'm going to say this, and you're gonna probably want to pillar me, but I've never read American Gods.
American Gods is worth reading. There's so many of his that are worth reading. He's written children's books, for crying out loud. I actually had the pleasure of meeting him at San Diego and got him to sign my copy of Sandman number one. So, he's a very interesting guy. I'm looking forward to a game based
sort of
on his ideas.
Like what what Egon Spengler would look like 20 years from now, doesn't he?
I have a cross between Egon Spengler and
Richards, maybe.
No, I was thinking of Tim Burton.
Oh yeah, that too. He has that vibe going as well. Yeah. The thing I know Neil Gaiman most for is The Death of the Endless. You know, that perky goth kid who plays Death.
Yes, Death. Yeah. Introduced in Sandman number 8. Yes.
Well, she's not Death. She's Death of the Endless.
Yes.
There is a Death. You know.
Yes.
And there's also a Morpheus, aka the Sandman. I mean, he can go into all of that.
It's complicated.
Yeah, I just remember. That's the character I know of his best is Death of the Endless, that perky goth girl who's so nice and cool, but she also is a representation of death.
Yes.
So going from the – now, speaking of Phil Fish's little insanity, you can move on to this item.
Lanning, Nintendo will be around for 100 years, but probably not Zynga or Microsoft. And this comes to us from VG247.
He's half right.
Oddworld Inhabitants founder Lauren Lanning thinks Nintendo will last 100 years, but not Zynga or Microsoft. In an interview with VentureBeat, Lanning stated, quote, when Satoru Iwata came out and said people were asking him, quote, when are you going to lay off your development staff? I don't remember exactly what he said, but it was basically, quote, laying off development is not going to solve our problems. Building great games is what we do, and we're going to continue doing it. When he said that, in my opinion, he was immortalized in the creative community. I would work with him in a second. When a man in that type of position, in a world where the golden rule is the rule, and that's what's expected of public companies, he stood up and said, that's not what we're about. What we're about is building great stuff. We have great people to build great stuff. We're going to do that. When I look at the history of Nintendo, I say Nintendo is going to be here in 100 years. I have no doubt. I doubt that Microsoft will be here in 100 years. I know Zynga won't be here in 100 years. I've been here longer than Zynga. We're not making headlines in the Wall Street Journal, but we're still building what we set out to build. Now we have to be clever and smaller in how we think, and we're more self-empowered than we've ever been.
Hold on. You know, right there, that last line is a big warning sign. Ding, 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 ding. When first you're saying, well, we have to do is build a lot of games. You know, we're all about making games. And then you say, well, we have to compress our vision here. We have to do it smaller now. We have to, you know, that sort of tells me, Nintendo's in big trouble.
And it wasn't Nintendo, right? I mean, he was nesting quotes inside quotes inside quotes. When he talks about the 100-year thing, he's talking about Nintendo having been around for 100 years already, right? Nintendo
started as around. For those who know, Nintendo has actually been around for 100 years. They've been around since 1898.
They started as a playing card company. So
he's talking about 100 years from now.
100 years from now,
I don't even know if we're going to have video games. I mean,
we're not going to be around 100 years from now.
I mean, video game consoles. We don't even know that
we'll have the inhalable video game
consoles 20 years from now.
The inhalable PS9 will be out by then, and
But here's the other thing: is that I'm pretty sure Zynga's not going to be around for another 5 years.
Zynga's not going to be around within 5 years. Zynga is almost done at this point. Microsoft will be around in some form. Whether Windows is still around or not remains to be seen.
Well, here's the thing is that
Office will be around in some form or not.
Well, here's the problem with Nintendo is that it doesn't have a backup like Microsoft and Sony does. You know, Sony had a terrible run with the PS3. I mean, they lost money hand over fist, but so long as people are buying TVs and radios and all that stuff, they're going to survive, you know? I mean, it takes a lot. I think they're going to rescue themselves with the PS4, but,
But, well, and that was Sony's problem in the PS3 era is that the television market tanked as well.
Yeah. Well, they put all their horses behind 3D. Now they're putting all their horses behind 4K. And
there were two divisions at Sony that were making money, and that was Sony Pictures and the insurance division. Believe it or not, Sony has an insurance company, and those were the two divisions profitable.
When you buy insurance for your TV, like, oh, you know, here's 3 years for $100, and you can get a free TV.
From what I understand, it's actually an insurance company. I think that only exists in Japan, but you know that's. It's a real insurance company.
Now, Microsoft has its hands in multiple pies as well. The problem with Microsoft right now is that Windows 8 isn't as much of a blockbuster as previous Windows have. But haven't we said that over and over, and all of a sudden they somehow managed to make it? And I know why, because every time you buy a laptop or a PC, oh, guess what comes with it?
Well, Microsoft's problem is it boils down to a basic of not – I don't want to say being able to innovate. They actually have come up with some very innovative products that have never actually made it to market. But you look at you know what they did with Bing. Google has this thing and it's very successful. We need to do what Google does, so we're going to make Bing. They're not thinking for themselves. They're trying to capture the fire in a bottle that other companies have already captured.
But you know what Microsoft has that a lot of companies don't have, and that's persistence.
They are persistent.
Yes, I mean, like Windows. I mean, Windows didn't come around, but you know, like you know, just like that. I mean, they had to beat out MS-DOS. You know, and you know, the thing about the Xbox division is that it's now the one thing that's actually saving the company now. Which is why a lot of the upper echelon are putting their hands in the cookie jar, and you know that's a problem because you have too many cooks and too many people who have ideas which aren't practical in the home entertainment space.
Well, you have people who don't know anything about gaming trying to make gaming decisions, and it ends poorly.
The problem with Nintendo is that it's a Japan-centric company, and that's when it's okay when the industry is a niche industry and production costs are small and you only have to worry about the population of Japan. And then if other people from around the world buy it, hey, that's okay too. But now Japan's market has been shrinking and shrinking and shrinking and shrinking, you know, relative to the market, and the costs of making a game is getting bigger and bigger and bigger, you know. How long can you keep on making a Mario platformer and still expect to survive?
Right, exactly.
You know, and the problem with Nintendo is there's nowhere else to turn. If people aren't buying the Wii U, that's a problem, you know.
The only way out is the same out that Sega had, and that's to go multi-platform, and Nintendo shows no interest in doing anything like that.
Now, the 3DS has started really selling well, but I don't know if you can... Well, let me ask you a question. Did the GBA, the original Game Boy, actually save Nintendo?
I don't think so. You know, the Game Boy Advance came out at a period of time...
I'm talking about the Game Boy Color.
Oh, the original Game Boy.
Yeah, the original Game Boy and the original Game Boy Color.
The original Game Boy came out at the end of the 8-bit era and just before the Super Nintendo, if I recall correctly.
Okay, so... Yeah,
so
I mean, the Super Nintendo
was right at Nintendo's height. I don't see it as saving the company yet.
Okay. Well, the thing is that it did create an entire new industry, though. I mean...
Yeah, it did.
Let me put it this way. It killed Tiger Electronics big time.
Yeah. The little football games died when the Game Boy came out.
Yeah.
And there have been numerous, you know, companies trying to enter the portable market, Sony being the most recent. But you look at the graveyard of handheld consoles. You have the NEC TurboGrafx handheld, which used the same cartridges as the console, failed. The Turbo Express, they called it. You had the Game Gear. You had the Atari Lynx. Well, you had my personal favorite of all the failed handheld consoles.
Neo Geo?
The Neo Geo Pocket Color. they had the Neo Geo Pocket, which was black and white, and then the Neo Geo Pocket Color, which was first came in the United States. Just a wonderful little handheld. I saw mine sitting on the
Nintendo
shelf just before
time,
I came
though?
To do the podcast.
You know how good Nintendo was at the time? When the Game Boy came out, their cartridges were capable of color. But yeah. they kept that back so that when you got the Game Boy Color, all your old Game Boy games, oh, look, they're in color now.
Yeah, yeah.
Okay, so we're going to move on to the next item. And this by the way, before we move on, the other thing about Lanning is that he is really butthurt by Microsoft. He's never going to forgive Microsoft ever, it seems.
I don't know what his deal is. I know he was burned over this whole self-publishing thing, but now that that's gone away, I don't know what his beef is.
I don't think he's going to forgive Microsoft. I mean, you know, there's people who don't want to forgive. You know, it's like, okay, you screwed me. I don't care anymore. I don't care. You know, give him credit. It's not about the money, I guess.
Yeah, I mean, I've seen that same kind of complaint among gamers. I mean, you know, even though Microsoft has backed off on the things that made the Xbox One so unpopular, there's a large contingent of gamers who don't trust Microsoft.
You know what? I would take that mistrust and put it in a basket somewhere, because as much mistrust as gamers might have for A or B, like, they mistrusted Steam, they mistrusted, you know, they say they mistrust Origin, but they still use it. The thing is that it doesn't matter if people mistrust you, so long as you're getting paid. I mean, that, you know, maybe let's say gamers trust Nintendo. They're certainly not helping them. You know, I mean, it's one thing to trust; it's another thing to help.
I trust Nintendo to make crappy kids' games.
Well, the thing is that you trust Nintendo to be able to cultivate third-party software.
No, you don't trust Nintendo to do anything.
That's what you trust them
software.
To do, but they don't. But they haven't. You know, I don't know. Maybe Nintendo can't. Nintendo's never trusted gamers ever.
No, they never have.
Yeah, so maybe it's sort of karmic now.
It must be. Our next news item, by the way, before you move on.
Speaking of trust and all that, there is one news item that I didn't post, but you saw the sort of trust that Nintendo had. Do you know about the Evo fighting conference that was this past couple of weeks, right?
Yes, and how they blocked Super Smash Brothers from
Brothers there at all, much less being streamed live.
I know, it was crazy.
And the funny thing is that, well, Nintendo helped Evo, I guess, in a way, because the Super Smash Brothers thing became the most popular event there because of you couldn't see it, you know.
Yeah.
But this sort of thing, like, coming down hard. I mean, lawyers love Nintendo because Nintendo wants to sue everybody, even if you breathe wrong on them, you know. And I think, you know, that's coming back to haunt them, you know, because you have to cultivate your – they had the biggest fan base of all time. I mean, they made crappy movies because of Nintendo and crappy animated shows. Anybody who's seen The Wizard can attest to that. Or those idiotic Zelda animated shows, you know.
And let's not forget Super Mario Brothers with Bob Hoskins. I mean,
Steve Martin should have sued the Zelda show for ripping off his trademark. Excuse me.
I never saw the Zelda show, so I can't say.
Okay, well, go to Nostalgia Critic and look it up.
I just want to say this about our next news item. Our next news item is probably the biggest news of the entire week. So if you missed the entire podcast except for this piece is the big news.
Well, you know what? Let me rephrase it this way. It's the biggest news that no one's talking about either.
It's the biggest news that nobody's talking about. And this is going to have the greatest impact on gaming over the next 5 to 10 years than any other piece of news we've talked about.
Well, why don't you go and talk about it. I mean, read the news item.
Activision Blizzard buys out $8.2 billion of its own stock from Vivendi. And this comes to us from Strategy Informer. A few weeks ago, Activision Blizzard had been negotiating a buyout from its parent company, Vivendi, which had been trying to sell the publisher. Activision Blizzard had purchased approximately 429 million shares of its own stock for $5.83 billion, while CEO Bobby Kotick and co-chairman Brian Kelly have personally purchased 172 million shares for $2.34 billion. All told, the company has given Vivendi $8.17 billion to gain its freedom. Vivendi still owns 12% of Activision Blizzard, which is hardly a majority share. Now that Vivendi has no controlling interest in Activision Blizzard, it'll be interesting to see which direction the publisher goes in now. According to Kotick, these transactions together represent a tremendous opportunity for Activision Blizzard and all its shareholders, including Vivendi. We should emerge even stronger, an independent company with a best-in-class franchise portfolio and the focus and flexibility to drive long-term shareholder value and expand our leadership position as one of the world's most important entertainment companies. The transactions announced today will allow us to take advantage of attractive financing markets while still retaining more than $3 billion cash on hand to preserve financial stability.
I'm going to say something right now. Remember when we discussed how a lot of the stupid left Activision, Electronic Arts, because John Riccitiello stepped down. Now, one thing you don't know that a lot of people may not know is that Vivendi has been making a lot of stupid decisions for Activision Blizzard. I mean, they put their own person as chairman of the board, I believe, you know?
Yeah.
And a lot of the policies that Activision Blizzard had were counterproductive to the company. And a lot of it is because of Vivendi. Now, one other thing about Vivendi is that they also absolutely destroyed Sierra Online, if I remember correctly.
That's true. And, you know, the biggest part of this is that when you are kind of enslaved to your shareholders, right, you do whatever makes the shareholders happy. And if that means coming out with a Guitar Hero game every 9 months, you're going to come out with a Guitar Hero game every 9 months, whether the public wants it or not. And, you know, taking the company private alleviates a lot of that pressure. So I think what we're going to see is better quality games from Activision going forward. It should be fantastic.
Now, also, I wonder, you know, it's funny because Microsoft, after Don Matrick left, had an about face. Electronic Arts had an about face. Remember, right after John Riccitiello came out, they announced The Sims 4. And what was the first thing they said about The Sims 4? Oh, by the way, it's going to be single player offline only. You know, which is a complete 180 from John Riccitiello's idea that everything had to have an online component.
Exactly, yeah. You
know? So Microsoft, after Don Matrick leaves, oh, guess what? That always online thing, screw it. Oh, by the way, this indie self-publishing thing, you can do it, you know? Oh, and by the way, we never actually discussed how Microsoft was going to do it. Microsoft, and I know we're going back to the first news item here, but Microsoft said that it's going to be sort of the same way that Apple does its certification for iTunes. You have a 2-week period in which they just make sure that nothing that you're doing is going to violate Xbox Live. It's not going to be, you know,
sneaking in an FTP or BitTorrent client where you shouldn't be. Exactly.
Or having, you know, bad content and, you know, content, you know, Nazis or anti-homosexual things and stuff like, you know, that sort of thing. You know, I mean, Now, getting back to this, actually, you know what? I really wish, you know, I wish they didn't throw out the baby with the bathwater, because one of the things I would have really liked to have seen with The Sims 4 is, yes, you have a single-player offline mode, but I would like to see some multiplayer functionality that's optional, you know, where you actually have your Sims visit a friend's house, that sort of thing, but that's something here. So let's discuss here what's going – now, the next news item actually is related to this, so we might as well –
it all ties together in one big ball, yes.
Paid subscription of World of Warcraft down to 7.7 million, and this comes to us from Business Wire. Activision Blizzard mentioned in their financial statement that the paid subscription of their premier MMO, World of Warcraft, has dropped in the past quarter to 7.7 million players. The report states Blizzard Entertainment's World of Warcraft remained the world's number one subscription-based MMO, ending the quarter with approximately 7.7 million subscribers. It's startling because the MMO had lost 1.3 million subscribers before that to drop to 8 million subscribers, which indicates that the trend is falling. To combat that, Blizzard will be starting an in-game store. At one point, World of Warcraft had 14 million paid subscribers. Two competing MMOs will be hitting this market soon, The Elder Scrolls Online and WildStar. It'll be interesting to see what happens when they debut. Now, it's easy to look at the 1.4, you know, the drop in subscribership, but it's still 7.7 million people paying $15 a month to play this game.
That's significant. Yes, exactly. I mean, but, you know, and I wonder how much of that is that Miss Pandaria just didn't attract people.
I just think, look, this MMO has been out since 2005. That's a long, long time for MMO to have this 7.7 million. MMO is doing jumping jacks if it has 1 million, not paid subscribers, just players, you know, people who are registered and playing, you know. So what happens, what I see here is that a lot of the casual people are starting to drop off because, you know, they're seeing something, ooh, look, new shiny, you know, with World of Warcraft, right? You know, I mean, you still have people who have a lot invested in this game, not only money-wise, but also emotional-wise, and they have their friends, and they have, you know. So at some point, you know, you're going to see less and less people bring World of Warcraft, but that's a natural progression.
It's only a matter of time, and these things do go in cycles. I remember when EverQuest seemed to be invincible, and then World of Warcraft came and knocked EverQuest out. I almost said Evercrack. It's only a matter of time before something takes out World of Warcraft. I don't think that either of the two we just mentioned are going to be it, but there will be something that will knock World of Warcraft off the top.
You know, Cataclysm was basically World of Warcraft 2 without making it World of Warcraft 2. You know,
just as long as it's not, you know, a Pogo version of Scrabble or something like that, I'll be happy.
It completely changed World of Warcraft. I wonder if they actually say, okay, we're going to start making World of Warcraft 2 with a new engine. You know, because one thing about World of Warcraft is that, yeah, it looks nice, but, you know, computers have improved since 2005, so you don't have to, you know, low-end machines aren't there anymore. You can bump up the graphics a bit more. Yeah. The thing, you can't do it too much because one of the charm is that it has that cartoonish look. You know, it's very friendly and inviting.
I'm recording this on my son's i7 machine, which would have been unheard of in 2005.
I've seen WildStar. It's basically World of Warcraft, but very snarky, very cartoonish, and very in science fiction. It looks really good. I've also seen Elder Scrolls Online, and I've actually played it, and it's very generic. One of the things that we have to also consider is that Project Titan is no longer around. Remember, Blizzard was working on that unknown MMO, that second MMO was codenamed Project Titan, and we learned that it's sort of like Duke Nukem Forever. They kept on changing it mid-development, although we never heard anything about it because they wisely, unlike 3D Realms, never said a peep about their game, you know? Because with 3D Realms, you're like, when is Duke Nukem Forever coming out? And you keep on talking about it. When is it coming out? And say, well, no, we changed the engine again. What? You changed the engine again? You know?
You can only do that so many times, and then, yeah.
With Blizzard, they never really said anything about it, so there's nothing for people to miss. Meanwhile, they're still enjoying World of Warcraft, you know. So whatever Project Titan was, ignore it. It failed, you know. So it's interesting to see that, you know, they're stubbornly not going with the free-to-play model because that's one thing that everybody's waiting for. And, you know, I don't think World of Warcraft could survive as a free-to-play game.
I think there's probably enough dedicated people out there that would keep it going.
No, I don't. You see, the thing is that a lot of MMOs can do it because they're not World of Warcraft. See, that's the point.
Right.
That they went free-to-play because they're not World of Warcraft. You know, World of Warcraft can't do it. They do have a free-to-play element in which you can go the first 20 levels, I believe. You know, and then you have to pay. And, you know, the thing about World of Warcraft people is that they will pay for everything. They paid $20 for a skin. $20 for a skin, that special mount. $20 plop, or is it $25? Either way, they spent $20 to $25 on basically what was just a reskinned mount. That was as fast as the best mount. That's it.
Yeah.
You know, and you couldn't even get it. You couldn't use it if you were low level. You had to be high level to do it. So it's, you know, and they make tons of money on those pets, you know, those little things that follow you around that do nothing except follow you around. And I admit it, I love my pets, you know, whenever I'm playing World of Warcraft. Oh, look, I got my penguin. I got a penguin following me around. Or I got a little whirlwind following me, that sort of thing, you know. So, you know, by the way, have you seen what Steam's been doing with collectible trading cards?
No, I don't follow Steam. I'm not a PC gamer, so I don't follow Steam.
You get virtual cards for doing stuff in your game, and you can trade them, and you can also sell them. And apparently, you can make enough money off them to make a living on it, even though these virtual cards really don't do much for you except, oh, look, I completed it. Yeah, so what?
They're like hats.
Basically, yeah. I mean, that's all Blizzard has to do with World of Warcraft. Start selling hats in the online store.
A hat delivery engine.
You know, hats or whatever, or make it the ultra black ink, you know, that sort of thing. Have you noticed that it's always the black dye that's always the most expensive because everybody wants to make their character dressed on all black? It's true. They want to be Johnny Cash.
Like I said, I don't play PC games, so I don't know about that. But I do know, you know, the real world T-shirts that they were selling for one of those military shooters were like $50 for a black T-shirt, which seemed excessive to me. So maybe Black Knight really is that expensive in real life. I don't know.
Well, I don't know. Well, if you go to E3 or any other thing, most of the T-shirts are in black because they're slimming, you know. And
it goes with everything.
Well, also, you know, the stereotype about gamers tends to be true.
Yeah.
Anyways, we're going to move on to listener feedback from Paul Pritke. Hey, guys, just to finish off the little Vita debate, I finally understand why Jordan claims what he claims. See, I came to Vita not primarily for AAA exclusive titles. I can play big titles on my PS3, and I have more than enough of them to last me for a very long time. That's why I don't want to spend too much time playing PSN titles there if I can play them on the Vita, especially if they are cross-buy. That's why I play games such as Sound Shapes, Zen Pinball, Velocity Ultra, or Quell Memento. That doesn't mean I don't enjoy Gravity Rush or Uncharted. I'm trying to platinum Need for Speed Most Wanted, and I'm also playing Rayman Origins. I travel a lot, so I use my Vita often when I don't have access to my PS3, and I'm only really bored with it. I agree, however, if all you want to do is play big exclusive titles, you might be disappointed. By the way, if you're someone who travels, then yeah, you might want the cross-platform, you know, Vita games, so that at least if you're playing one of your PS3 PSN games, you know, you can play it on your Vita and save the game and be able to continue it when you get home, you know. But you don't have that issue. You don't have the travel issue that he does.
Right. And the other part of it is too that the whole idea is to get people to buy into the platform. People aren't going to spend $300 on new hardware if all it has are the same games that they can already play on their PS3.
Why don't they just call it the PS4 Mini and be done with it, you know? This is the PS4 Mini, you know? You can play all your PS4 games on it, you know, or your PSN games on it. Yeah. P.S., I also played the demo for Soul Sacrifice, and it seemed neat. What's wrong with the rest of it? Okay, Jordan, you can answer this because I can't. Have you played Soul Sacrifice?
I played the demo. I thought the demo was fairly weak. It's basically a Monster Hunter ripoff. So it does everything that Monster Hunter does, but not as well.
I don't know. I'm curious about Monster Hunter, but I think it might be too Animal Crossing for me. Anyway, add Android consoles? Meh. I really don't know who the target for these devices is. If you're a casual gamer, then a 4 to 5 inch smartphone screen is enough to play Fruit Ninja or Angry Birds or some other game. If you want a better experience, then get a tablet. At least you'll be able to use it for other things as well. I understand that it's easier to release a game on those platforms than on the PS3, Vita, or Xbox, but I don't think it's worth it. The install base, because of the Android boxes, won't be big. People complain about the hardware. I think they're trying to find a niche where there isn't any. Well, there is one big thing about the Android, the Ouya and the Shield, and that is that you're using a controller. I mean,
right.
Remember the big thing, the big April Fool's joke that people were really upset was the iCade, so that you could use your iPod or your iPad or whatever.
That actually came out. That actually became a real product. There was enough interest in it that it was actually physically produced.
Yeah, but the problem is that you can't do MAME
You can't do MAME on the iPad, but there is a game, an arcade app that goes with it, and it does work.
Yeah, but I want to play MAME on my stupid you have to jailbreak it, and I'm too lazy to jailbreak.
Yeah.
At The Walking Dead, way to spoil the game, guys. Winky face.
I did not spoil the game. I'll go on the record saying I did not spoil the game.
We didn't spoil anything, really. There's nothing in that game, no surprises in the game that we mentioned. I saw it, except for the fact that, you know, Clementine.
You mentioned that Lee died. I mean, that's kind of a spoiler there.
Yeah, you know, that's a couple of months, like a year later, and, you know, it was his sled. You know, we all know it's his sled. And you know, the way that it's The Walking Dead. Of course the main character is, you know, going to have that kind of thing. You know, people die in it left and right. Has the new season of Walking Dead started?
Doesn't start till October.
Okay. Because I want to see that his son get whacked. I don't like.
I put up a video on YouTube today. I was bored, so I made a YouTube music video.
Okay. I still haven't played 400 Days. It'll probably I'll probably get it right before season 2. However, Clementine, I never had any doubt that she will be in the second season. I only hope that you're not controlling her because. And that she's only a supporting character. Spoilers! It would be nice to come across her and the mysterious figure she saw at the end of the first season. I'm willing to bet you that was Omid and Krista. It had to be. Because
that's what that's the only thing that makes sense.
Because, you know, he told her, Lee said, look for her.
Right, right.
Maybe she reacts according to what Lee taught her in the first season. Maybe she has her hair short, or she tries to shoot you. It's not a bad idea to bring her back. I just think that whatever he told her, she's going to mention first. I don't think she's going to wear her hair long if you didn't tell her to wear her hair short. You know, I just think that she'll just say, you know, the thing I remember most was he told me to keep my hair short. You know. At BSG. Battlestar Galactica. It was my birthday last weekend, and I got the Battlestar Galactica board game from my friends. We played it for the first time yesterday, and it was a disappointing experience. I've heard so many good things about the game, so my hopes are really high. I guess we shouldn't have started playing it at 9 p.m. The game lasted until after midnight. Only after midnight? With how many people were playing? And after a hard day of work with people who had no idea what the game was about. Okay, that hurts. It probably didn't help that I was a Cylon and was forced to reveal myself early in the game. You don't have to reveal yourself if you're a Cylon right away, just so you know. The tension went down rapidly. We'll give it another go when circumstances are better. Okay, here's the thing. It's one thing to play Battlestar Galactica, but the other thing is that it's best with five players, and it's best if you get the two expansions that came for it. Or else, you know, the Pegasus using the Pegasus expansion and using the one that because what happens is if you just play the base game, you don't have a CAG, and one of the expansion comes with the Cylon leader. So yeah, I mean, sometimes it's best to play this game with people who know the game.
So it sounds like Cards Against Humanity. It's more fun with the expansions.
Well, Cards Against Humanity is the same game, no matter how many expansions you use. It's still apples to apples. The expansions bring new rules and stuff. Anyway, I never watched the show, but I hear it has a significant following. So the writer of the series must have done something right. An epic TPP, third person perspective action puzzle RPG game, mixing Uncharted with Mass Effect would be nice. The question of the week, I mentioned FPP last week. I meant first-person perspective. I have to stick with the old golden oldies. To me, Blood was amazing. The gore, the enemies, the atmosphere. With all those pixels flying around, I was able to see past them and immerse myself in experience. And it was really scary. On top of that, there were tons of Easter eggs. I remember one vividly. I was able to get to a room using some ventilation shafts. In the room was a bed stained with blood and air freshness hanging from the ceiling. On the wall was written the word sloth, referencing the movie Seven. There were many, many more. Based on the immersion and the atmosphere of the game, this has to be my favorite. One thing about Blood was it was one of the few build engine games. And for those of you who don't know the build engine, that was the engine that was used to power Duke Nukem 3D. And I know you liked Blood, didn't you?
I don't remember playing Blood.
Really? It was the one in which you play a vampire.
I don't remember playing Blood. I remember playing Hexen.
Okay. Well, Hexen was a true 3D game. One thing I remember about Hexen the most, or maybe it was Hexen 2, was the catapult, and you put the sheep in the catapult, and you catapult the sheep. You remember that? And then you catapult yourself.
I do not know.
Really? Bad memory. Okay, moving on to the next news. Moving on to the next letter.
From Arthur the Fifth at first high-profile Kickstarter suckage. As a budget console may sound, I agree with Pavel. No one needs them. It's better to buy an Android phone that plays Android games, amongst other things, rather than a console that just plays Android games. Not to mention that most gamers, i.e. me, believe that Android games are not proper games and are aimed at people who enjoy touching
things. Hold on. No. Okay.
Are you saying you don't enjoy touching things, Jonah? Because I know for a fact you enjoy touching things.
I don't play Android games. I actually play iOS games, but they're the same thing, you know. And Civilization Revolution and Fruit Ninja and Game Dev Story, that sort of stuff, you know. So no, I mean the thing is that I don't play with my DS. I never bought a 3DS because I have my iPod Touch here, you know, and it's not even a phone.
Right. Granted that a few Android games may be good, most gamers would rather stick to mainstream consoles with their AAA titles.
How many of them cost 99 cents, though? See, that's just...
Well, how many of them cost 99 cents for one? And the other part of it is that the Ouya is a $100 console. So, you know, from people that are in my perspective, right, I have an Android phone. I have an older LG Optimus 5, Optimus V. I guess it's the same problem that we have with Arthur. I can never tell if it's V or 5. it's an Optimus V phone. It's running Froyo Android 2.2, and a lot of the new stuff on it simply won't run. So I have two choices. I can go out and buy a $400 phone that'll run all the new games, or I can get a $99 console and keep my phone as a phone and a hotspot, which is really all I use it for, is a phone, text, and hotspot. So I'm okay with that. You know, if I'm interested in playing an Android game, it's not going to run on my phone very well, but it'll run on my TV just fine.
You know, I got T-Mobile for my carrier, and the thing I really wanted was Virgin Mobile, but I wouldn't have been able to transfer my my landline over to Virgin Mobile because it's a pay-as-you-go. But I'd rather do that because $35 a month, in which you get unlimited online and unlimited text, but only limited chat, you know, talking minutes. I don't mind that. I don't care about having unlimited minutes. I don't call much on the phone. You know, I only text and I only go online. So as soon as my thing is over, you know, I'll transfer my number over to a Virgin phone. Maybe in 2 years, if they're still around. That is. That's what I love about Virgin, by the way. They do a lot of stuff that's really inexpensive but quality because their billionaire owner is such a philanthropist, and he knows, you know, there are people who want cheap stuff.
Well, and they sublease on the Sprint network. So if you have a Virgin phone, mine is a Virgin mobile phone. I've had a Virgin phone for almost 10 years now. $35 a month, and I only upgraded it to the unlimited minutes because I started using it for business purposes and needed to. I was actually running out of minutes.
Well, even then, it's only $50 a month, isn't it?
$55 a month for unlimited everything. I mean, what's not to like?
And $35 a month for having unlimited online. Hey, you know what? I'll take that any day. But right now, I'll just deal with the fact I only have 300 gigabytes a month. And, you know, I don't plan on using it that much, and so there's a lot of Wi-Fi hotspots in Manhattan that I'll try to use as well. The thing is that, you know, it's like frustrating. I can't find a Wi-Fi, and I really need to check this out on my phone or whatever, you know. So that just removes that thing. And unlimited texting, you know, that's probably what I'll be using my phone for. Anyways, moving on.
To Infinity and straight to HD. Never played Star Control, but it sounds pretty good. I would love to play an HD remake, although I'm highly skeptical of HD remakes. The one I played were pretty crap. God of War HD, Monster Hunter, and Wii U, to name a few horrible-looking HD games. Furthermore, I am not sure how it would go down with modern gamers. As an interesting topic to discuss is how gamers have simplified over the years. Just compare Elder Scrolls Morrowind to Skyrim or Grand Theft Auto 3 to Grand Theft Auto 4.
Okay, time out there. Hold on. Now, you're confusing user interfaces with either something, because something can be incredibly complex, but now you no longer have the crappiest user interfaces ever. Let me put it another way. System Shock 1, have you ever tried to play it without the mouse? You can't use a mouse. They had a mouse patch, but even with a mouse patch, it is tough as hell to play simply because the user interface is so bad, you know?
I mean, and nobody was meant to play games with a keyboard.
You know, I mean, you also have, you know, don't equate, you know, making things a little less cluttered with oversimplification. I mean, sometimes, you know, there was this one shooter in which you had to keep track of the person's temperature, their thing, you know, all these factors, and it wasn't fun because you were concerning yourself with too many things that really were irrelevant. You know, I mean. Yeah. There's a difference between dumbing something down and just making it fun and making it simpler.
Yes, sometimes simpler is better.
You know, K-I-S-S, you know?
He says, I'm concerned that a complicated sounding game like Star Control can't be released as simply as an HD remake without being redone from the ground up. On another note, Sega Mega Drive had an epic Star Trek Next Generation game, which was effectively an Enterprise simulator. Tons of galaxies to explore. You could land on and explore planets, participate in space battles, and tweak every available setting of your ship. A very engrossing game as far as I remember.
Okay, you know what? Let's put it this way. I forgot the name of the game, damn it, and you're going to kill me for forgetting the name of this game. You know, the 40-button controller.
Steel Battalion.
Yeah. Steel Battalion was not that long ago, okay? No. I mean, look, you want complicated? Go talk to any EVE Online player. There are complicated games out there for people who want that level of immersion in which they have to pay attention to every single little detail, you know? They have
that's what makes the Gran Turismo games so popular, right? Is that you can do everything with your car.
I guess.
or what made Little Big Planet so popular, the builder, where you could build your own, you know, calculator running off ropes and pulleys.
Some platformer, though. I don't think that he's talking about. But I think he's talking about our games like, where, oh, my God, you can't no longer do this? Well, that sucks. You know, and even though that was taken out because it was just stupid, you know.
Star Control was a resource management simulator. Kind of like Mule in that respect. It was a more advanced version of Mule. So, you know, I don't know if I haven't seen a resource management simulator in a long time. So I don't know how well it would
go.
People seem to love the Sims games. So what? I don't see why it would possibly not appear.
Hey, look, Elite Dangerous made its Kickstarter goal, you know, and that's coming out. And everybody remembers Elite, or at least I remember Elite. Yeah, I mean, there was an example I was going to give of people complaining. Oh, here, World of Warcraft. Now they really simplified their thing. Remember, they used to have Edie probably didn't play it. They used to have all these tech trees, right? And they took that away and just put, okay, you have these choices as you level up. And the reason why they did that was everybody was taking the same builds over and over and over again. They said, well, what's the point? You know, so you can have the illusion of choice. You're not choosing this. Why bother? And we can play balance a lot better if we know exactly what people are going to have. So they did that. You know, so they're, you know, sometimes over it, simplification is because people simplify it for themselves. You know, they did it themselves, and the developer said, okay, fine. If you're going to do that, we'll do what you do.
So at the question of the week was, what's your favorite first-person shooter? I will split this question in two parts, simply because it's very rare that an FPS has a good single-player campaign and multiplayer components simultaneously. My favorite multiplayer game was Battlefield Bad Company 2. I have such fond memories of that game, sunk hours in the online battles. Its revolutionary score system could force a group of unrelated people to work together as a team for a common goal. So far, it's the only game that I've seen to accomplish this in terms of single-player campaign. I will have to go with Call of Duty Modern Warfare 2. And before I'm stoned by angry moms and dads, I would like to remind everyone that I grew up in the post-Soviet perestroika times and had no access to FPS games until 2005. Modern Warfare 2 was one of the first games I played on a proper HD TV. The graphics were remarkable beyond words, and the story was interesting. Although I thoroughly enjoyed the experience, it was the first contemporary war shooter I ever played, so the genre is still fresh for me. Multiplayer was crap, though. Never really got into it.
Yeah, both games came out in the way, way past old age of 2010.
Yeah.
So they're both new games. And the thing is that Bad Company has a huge, huge following. And they see, why are you releasing another Battlefield game? Bring us Bad Company 3 already. And they've been doing a lot of hints about Bad Company 3, so we shall see. So look for our show notes at Gaming Podcast, and then at Industry News and our Gaming History articles. We enjoy your feedback, so leave some comments at GamingPodcast.net. Also, hit us up at Facebook.com/GamingPodcast or the forums at GamingPodcast.net/forum. Or send us your comments, too, at Fans@GamingPodcast.net. If you're into gaming news, you can check it out at GameStooge.com. Also, subscribe to us on iTunes. Leave us some iTunes comments.
Yay, iTunes comments!
There is no question of the week this week. We just want you to ask us questions, because I really can't. I didn't want to keep on going with what your favorite fill-in-the-blank genre is for now, so we're going to take a break from that.
I would kind of like to ask a question, because every show we've been doing the What Are We Playing, I'd like to know what our listeners are playing. What are you playing right now?
Okay, well, you know what? So that when we do our What Are You Playing, you should say, What Are You Playing?
What are you playing?
What are you playing?
Hey, what are you playing?
What are you playing at, man? Anyways, This is the first time we've recorded on Sunday in a while, and I guess I'm a little bit thrown off by it.
It was a little bit odd recording a day early, but I'm okay with that too.
Well, it's supposed to be recorded on Sunday. We're not supposed to record on Monday. The reason we record on Monday is because I kept on getting sick of big news being broken on Sunday morning. It's like, oh God, we missed this.
Exactly. Yeah. And if we need to do that for Mondays, I'm okay with that too.
You know what?
You know, just bear in mind that I do have to work.
There was so much news this past week, so much earth shattering news, that Sunday was fine. Also, tomorrow's my birthday, so I didn't want to have to do this on my birthday.
Oh, hey, happy birthday.
Anyways, see you next week. I will be 1 year older, and Jordan will be 1 week older. So
I will just be 1 week older until next month, and then I get to be a year older too.
Okay, so there's your teaser for the next the next birthday coming up. Yeah, I'm sort of lonely not having Paul. I'm going to have to ask him when his 3 months are up. I don't know when we started this.
Yeah, I was actually talking to Dan the other night, testing my microphone, and it was nice talking with him again too.
Yeah, well, he has his own thing, but Paul just has a crunch going on, and we know how crunches are for developers.
Dan was tied up in the Civ beta, and he couldn't talk about it. He was desperately disappointed that he could not talk about being in the Civ beta.
Guess what?
NDAs and all of
it
that.
It just came out, so he no longer is forced not to talk about it.
Exactly, yeah. No? And, but he was dying. He's been playing it for months, and he was dying that he couldn't talk about it.
Well, now he can talk about it if he wanted to.
That's true.
Anyways, we'll see you next week.
See you next week.